Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their pursuit of better health care. Learn more at nm.org/better.
It is 940. Dean Richards back in the saddle. On our Sunday morning show, coming up later on, WWE legend and actor John Cena talks to me about his new movie. He's one of the nicest guys that I've ever interviewed. I've interviewed him multiple times. He could not be nicer, more pleasant, polite, funny. You'll hear it when we play the interview back a little bit later on. Also coming up on our weekend theater segment today, we're going to be talking about the Dance for Life benefit, which is now in its 33rd year. The event which brings half a dozen of Chicago's best dance companies together on one stage in one night and raises money for good cause. We also do our Food Time show. That's coming up later on. And the Week in Health, which is what we have been doing here in this particular time slot for four or five years, something like that. Now, joining us this morning is Dr. Victoria Weston, who is an emergency medicine physician and the director of immediate care in Gurnee. Dr. Weston, thank you so much for joining us. Good morning.
Good morning, and thank you for having me.
Really appreciate you joining us today. One of the big stories here in Chicago has been the induction of former Chicago Bears superstar Steve McMichael, Mongo, into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. He is battling ALS, amyotrophic lateral sclerosis. Some people call it Lou Gehrig's disease. And we see him in the bed. He is, you know, pretty disabled right now. And I was just wondering if you could, just give us sort of the basics on what ALS is and what it does to people who get it.
Absolutely. It's a really difficult and terrible illness. So typically there is only a 2 to 5 year survival rate. 30% of people make it 5 years, 10% 10 years, maybe 5% 20 years or longer. So most people do not do well with this. It is a degenerative illness, and unfortunately, there is no cure. And so common symptoms include muscle weakness or stiff muscles. People might find that their reflexes are a little bit overactive or have some speech difficulty or trouble swallowing. So, and it's progressive. So usually people come in and then they eventually make the diagnosis. As it progresses, people can lose their ability to speak and breathe on their own. So, you can see people sometimes have what we call a trach if they can't breathe on their own. But ultimately, as I mentioned, there's unfortunately no cure.
It's a neuromuscular disease. Is that right?
Exactly.
So is it a breakdown of the brain's ability to communicate with the muscular system in your body? And when I say the muscular system, I don't mean just arms and legs. But as you say, the ability to swallow, the ability to breathe, the ability to do things that you don't even realize that your brain and the muscular system is doing. Am I explaining this right, or am I making it even more confusing?
Yeah, I think it's unfortunately just a really difficult illness, and it's just your body can't tell. Your body communicates with your muscles and organs through a variety of ways, and ultimately when that communication breaks down, that's when you have these types of effects. So you can see that people really go through quite a bit when they are diagnosed with this, and I think there's a lot of great research being done, but, unfortunately, not much to do other than treat the symptoms at this point.
Yeah, it's called Lou Gehrig's disease because of the baseball player Lou Gehrig, who had it and retired with his famous speech that he gave at Yankee Stadium, that he feels like he's the luckiest guy on earth. But that was probably the first high-profile case of amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, ALS. And there have been other high-profile people as well. But Steve McMichael announced that he was diagnosed in 2021 at the age of 63. So you're saying that the survival rate for this is fairly short. That's 3 years for him. That seems pretty like he's been living with it and battling it for quite a long time.
Absolutely, and you can see that it's progressive. And so I think I saw that his family, or he had written a speech before he lost his ability to speak on his own. So, it doesn't start off as severe as what you might have seen in the photos of him, but it does progressively get worse over a few-year period.
Yeah, it's tough, and our prayers are with him, and the research continues. I mean, I remember from when back in the day we used to do the Jerry Lewis Labor Day Telethon for the Muscular Dystrophy Association, one of the diseases, if you will, that we were always talking about battling and trying to find a cure for was ALS. And there have been progress made in fighting other neuromuscular diseases, but this one remains elusive apparently, huh?
So far, unfortunately, but I think there's a lot of great research being done. The ALS Association has a lot of great resources, so hopefully that will change in our lifetimes. But right now, unfortunately, there is no cure.
Yeah, that's tough. So we'll just keep an eye on that. In the meantime, what else I have been seeing in the news? More upticks in COVID. What's the latest on all of this?
Yeah, it's a great question. So we're certainly seeing an increase in rates across the Chicago area. The Chicago Department of Public Health has an alert that they release every week. And so for this past week, rates were around 11.3%. And that's of those samples that we know about that tested positive. You know, certainly it may be higher than that out in the community. Flu is still very low at less than 1%, but we are seeing an increased rate of this in the community. So it's good for everyone to be aware of it, you know, take precautions as you might normally do, and we'll have to keep an eye on it.
Does that mean, I think a lot of people kind of fell off their regimes of vaccinations when things died down a little while. Maybe that's why we're having an uptick now, is that people kind of let their guards down a little bit. But where should people be with regard to vaccines against COVID? I know it's can be a politically hot charged topic, but I'm more interested in people being healthy than anything else.
Yes, absolutely. So the good news is there will be a new updated 2024-2025 vaccine, from what the CDC has been saying, that will be released sometime this fall, likely, hopefully by September, if not later this month. And Moderna, Novavax, and Pfizer are all releasing newer versions of the vaccine. And so really, it's recommended for anyone 6 months and above to get it. The people who are most at risk, though, are those at the extremes of age, or especially elderly patients. So great if you've initially had the initial vaccine series, great if you've been boosted, but even better if you can get the fall booster when it comes out.
Okay. And take all the necessary precautions, the usual. Should we go back to wearing masks again? A lot of people were wearing gloves back in the day. Are we at that point, do you think? Or what do you think is the appropriate precautionary measure we can all be taking right now?
Absolutely. Well, at this point, we're in a different place than we were at the start of the pandemic. Most people have either had it, or they've had it multiple times, or they've been vaccinated, or some combination. So most people have some pre-existing immunity to this. So it's different than when it was an entirely new illness that we had not been exposed to. We have a lot more information about it. We have treatments. We have Paxlovid, which is an antiviral for people who qualify. And so there's a lot more that we can do. In terms of transmission rates, it's pretty low outdoors. And as far as masking and gloves, that's really a personal risk assessment. You know, if you're someone who has an organ transplant, or you're being treated for cancer and you have a weakened immune system, or you're, you have an elderly relative or someone you're caring for who's, a newborn infant, your risk assessment might be different than someone who's otherwise healthy and has no risk factors.
I was having a conversation with somebody the other day. We were talking about the early days of COVID, and we were kind of laughing a little bit. It's like, remember when we thought that we had to, like, wash our groceries, wash the actual packaging of our groceries when we brought it back from the grocery store? I was doing it. I was taking every precaution, but now I'm kind of laughing about it a little bit. But we know a lot more about the disease than we did back then, right?
Absolutely. And if we don't know, it's better to be cautious. But now that we know more and we've had multiple years of good research and good quality research and updated guidelines, and most people have some immunity to it, that we can approach things a bit differently.
What about long-term effects for people who did get COVID over the past couple of years? I know that a lot of people had heart issues as a result of that. Some people had very, very long-term loss of taste and smell. Have there been residual effects that we've seen as a result of people getting COVID during the worst part of the pandemic?
Some people are having long COVID symptoms, and there's a lot of great research being done to better understand what exactly constitutes long COVID, what's the cause, and what we can do to help people who were unfortunately affected by it. So there's a lot of good things coming in the pipeline. The best thing to do to prevent it at this point is to be vaccinated. If you don't get COVID, you're not going to get long COVID. But for those who unfortunately do have those symptoms, there's a lot that can be done. Certainly cardiac issues, but also some people with lung problems persistently and haven't quite gotten back to their normal status. So a lot to be done, but obviously certainly affecting people's quality of life who are experiencing those symptoms.
Are those things that correct themselves, the cardiac problems or lung issues, or are those things that require further care?
Really depends on what the issue is. And some people, you know, if they, for example, find, like, let's say you're an athlete, and you find that you're taking some time to get back to your normal performance level and that your breathing isn't quite normal. You know, some people do gradually get back to their normal baseline status, but it really depends on what the problem is and how severely ill you were and how severely you were affected by the initial illness.
The 630 area code says, my husband and I are recovering from COVID right now. Do we need to wait a period of time before getting the new vaccine that you were talking about?
Yes, I would wait a little bit since you just absolutely have it. But the good news is it should be out later this fall, and it should be available through the fall. So I would have them, I would recommend they talk with their family physician and see when they recommend that they get it based on, you know, when they first got ill and their other health conditions, and they can take it from there.
In a general sense, though, if you know, if someone has COVID, how long should they wait or how long do they need to wait before they can get the new vaccination?
Usually we recommend about 90 days, but best discuss with your family doctor. But reasonably, you want to give your body some time to recover from the illness that you just had before you get the vaccine.
Okay. Let me also ask about Alzheimer's disease. There have been a couple of stories this week about new tests, new developments with regard to diagnosing Alzheimer's disease in the first place with people. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think just to give a baseline, Alzheimer's is the most common form of dementia, but it's a very specific type of dementia, and it causes progressive memory loss. Alzheimer's type of dementia is caused by an abnormal protein that forms a plaque in the brain. So that affects your ability to think and perform your normal activities. There is a new blood test that's coming on. There's a number of new tests that aim to detect this protein in the blood in early stages of the illness. And this is different than the more invasive types of testing we've done before with either certain types of specific CT scans or spinal tap or other testing. And so this blood test is available. It's still new, so still not FDA approved. There are no guidelines for use, but they are being developed. So it's really recommended for people who are showing early signs of possible Alzheimer's. So, for example, there's some signs of early cognitive impairment, someone's forgetting things that they normally would remember, having trouble taking care of their basic activities or their finances, but not necessarily someone who's, you know, maybe forgotten a name once or is otherwise worried. So a lot of good research to come on this, but a really exciting new development. Hopefully, if we can identify it earlier, we can intervene earlier.
773 area code asks, is Alzheimer's hereditary?
Everything can have a genetic component, but it's not recommended for the new test. If you have a family member who's had Alzheimer's, they're not necessarily recommending that you have this test.
Okay, so it doesn't necessarily mean if you have a family member or two or three to get Alzheimer's that you might be a candidate for it also?
You could be, but it doesn't necessarily mean that you should get this new test.
What it would be the sign that you should get this new test? Just symptoms of Alzheimer's?
Yes. So people find that they have just progressive memory loss or confusion. So, you know, people, an early sign is someone starts to get lost or forgetfulness where you're repeatedly asking the same questions. People sometimes have behavioral changes or some aggression, you know, trouble taking care of basic activities. Sometimes people wander off. So more than just, you know, oh, I forgot this name or this phone number, or, oh, I forgot to go grab my groceries.
Yeah, I mean, it's something which is a much more severe kind of memory loss, more than, you know, where did I put my car keys? I mean, we all have memory loss. Everybody
100%
can't remember some things. Why did I walk into this room? It's like it should be much more severe of who are you in this room? Who is that other person who you would normally recognize? Something that would be completely unusual or repeatedly asking the same question, yeah, even though it's been answered over and over again. Am I right about that?
100%. So, you know, this is different than normal aging, and it's a very specific form of dementia. So if you're not having anything beyond, you know, typical forgetfulness, wouldn't worry. But if you've noticed in yourself or, you know, in a family member that there's significant changes in their cognition or behavior, that's when you might want to do more investigating.
708 area code is asking, will there be free tests available for COVID sometime in the future?
I don't know the answer to that question, but it's a good one. I certainly hope so.
Yeah. I think some insurance are still covering it, but it's not free the way it was during the worst part of the pandemic. Dr. Victoria Weston, we really appreciate you joining us today. Very informative. Emergency medicine physician and director of immediate care in Gurnee. We appreciate you being with us today. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.